720 WGN. Welcome to the 5 o'clock hour. The beat is on. Mark Harmon here until 6:30. Blackhawks hockey coming on up. The Hawks and the Dallas Stars. Hawks have been playing better hockey as of late, although they have dropped their last two. They've won four of their last six. I will talk about some Blackhawks hockey coming up here. But I do want to get into the story of the day in the world of sports, and this one crosses over into, I suppose, politics and certainly the planet. If you missed it, Yale and Harvard were playing in a football game this afternoon. Now, it was an incredible football game that went to double overtime. Yale won. Great win for the Yale. What are the Yales? Yale something? Curtis, help me out. Who's Yale? Shockingly, I was not considered to be a candidate as a student at Yale. They're the Yale incredibly smart people. What are they, Curtis?
I don't know if this is right, but Handsome Dan is what comes
That doesn't that doesn't
up,
that does not sound correct.
I'm going to jump in with
thank
an
you,
answer
Bob.
To a sports question.
Yes,
this is a historic first.
I love
so,
it, Bob. What do you got?
5:09 p.m. I believe they're the Yale Bulldogs.
The Bulldogs and Harvard the Crimson.
Harvard, the Crim, I think it is. Yeah.
Right?
They call Alabama the Crimson Tide.
So maybe it's not the Crimson.
Call me Deacon Blues.
Harvard is the what? I should know this. This is poor planning by me right now.
Crimsons.
The Crimsons. Okay, the Harvard Crimsons and the Yale Bulldogs in a great football game. Now, why am I talking about this? Well, climate change activists stormed the field at the Yale and Harvard football game. Bob, have you had this in the news? Bob walked away. Never mind. Doesn't matter. So, they disrupted the game at halftime. They walked on out at halftime, about 500 students, to call attention to the universities to divest their investment in fossil fuels. Both Harvard and Yale heavily invested in fossil fuels, which of course is considered the most major reason that we are having climate change and things need to be different. Now, why is this interesting? I think it's interesting on a zillion levels. Number one, hail to the rich kids here. If you're going to Harvard, you're going to Yale, most likely you're coming from some serious money. And you might only think about yourself and your family and the seven yachts that you're skiing behind. Entirely possible, right? It costs $78,000 to go to Harvard. That's for 1 year. I'll do the math for you. Over 4 years, that's over $300,000. That's $312,000 to go to Harvard for an undergraduate degree.
That's a lot of student debt.
That is some serious coin. Sure, there are some people, I suppose, that are taking on that debt, but most kids that are going there, they come from some serious dough. Same thing for Yale, $75,000 a year. $75,000, that's $300,000 for 4 years. Now you look at the endowments. Harvard. Could they perhaps charge less to go to Harvard? What's that endowment? Maybe they don't have a lot of money. Oh yeah, their endowment. $40.9 billion with a B. Yale's endowment, $29.4 billion, again, with a B. So, but why do I like this? Because people do tend to side with things that matter to them. And these guys are living a sweet life. This is awesome. Look at all the money I have. These investments in fossil fuels, obviously Yale and Harvard think they're good investments. They wouldn't be in there if they didn't think it was going to make them money. They're just trying to make more money. But these young kids are like, hey, it ain't all about the money. I can't take the money with me if the planet's on fire. So let me go out here and actually try to do something. A group of about 70 protesters took the field just before 2 o'clock. They were joined by others. At its peak, it grew to about 500 people. 45 yards of real estate on the field as they had a significant delay here. I think it's awesome. And people are, you know, it's like, wait a second. Like, there was one comment that I read here that I thought was very interesting. Here was, let's see here, one of the statements from, this is coming from Harvard has declined for to divest for years. Yale has made some divestment pledges. This is from Fossil Fuels. Quote, while we agree on the urgency of this global challenge, we respectfully disagree with divestment activists on the means by which a university should confront it. This is a statement from Yale. Universities like Harvard have a crucial role to play in tackling climate change, and Harvard is fully committed. I'm sorry, it's the statement from Harvard. And Harvard is fully committed to leadership in this area through research, education, community engagement, dramatically reducing its own carbon footprint, and using our campus as a testbed for piloting and proving solutions. But not for taking away our money and investments that prove profitable. And that's where the students are having a problem. Karen N. Pert, a Yale spokesman, said, referring to the protest, quote, we are firmly for the right of free expression. And then she added, quote, it's regrettable that the orchestrated protest came during a time when fellow students were participating in a collegiate career-defining contest and an annual tradition when thousands gather from around the world to enjoy and celebrate the storied traditions of both football programs and universities. Karen, you are missing the point. If they did the protest in the middle of a science class, nobody would be talking about it. You need a vehicle to get attention. And they used, it's not like there's a ton of sporting events on the Yale and Harvard campus that is going to get covered here. This one does. They played it at Fenway Park one year. It actually has a little bit of juice, not as much as Michigan and Ohio State for all of us here in the Midwest, but it's got some juice. So they went to where they could get as much attention. You could have said something along the lines of, well, you know, it kind of sucks for the football players today, and maybe they lost their focus for a little bit, but we understand that this is actually more important than a football game. And these kids showed a ton of courage by going out there and standing up for what they believed in. And while people that came out to enjoy Yale and Harvard, who ended up, by the way, seeing a great game, 50-43, Yale wins in double overtime, maybe they were inconvenienced a little bit, maybe they could take a longer bathroom break, but maybe they were actually thinking about something. And like, you know what? Oh. And what's clearly going on with climate change, by the way, is, as we see the argument, and or more importantly, the action, and not even just climate change, on gun control as well, it's all the young people that are actually doing it. They're the ones stepping up. The older people are like, eh, probably not going to impact me. I got a sweet life over here. I'm not going to be around anyway. They're saying 30 more years. Okay.
Yeah, you have your wedding to worry about.
Right,
next
right, right. And listen, I will raise both hands right now on the radio and say, like, I'll bring stuff up on the radio, but it's not like I'm out there protesting. These guys went out there and did something. Good for them. 312-981-7200. Was this right of the Harvard and Yale students? Do you appreciate what they did today? I'm willing to have that conversation. I'd like to have that conversation. I thought it was pretty awesome. And I thought it was especially cool coming from kids who are coming from that particular background. That, look, this is something that is more important than just our universities making more and more money with being in investments that clearly are paying off for them. So I think it's a question, you know, that I'm sure Harvard and Yale and maybe a bunch of other universities are having right now as to how we can best support our students who clearly care about their future and the future of the planet, and this is not going away. So congrats to both Harvard and Yale and the students that stepped up today to step up for something that they believe in. Right or, you know, whether you agree or don't agree, I think everybody should be on board with expressing yourself in a non-violent, going out on the field for however long of a delay they caused. The football game ended up finishing. Everybody was good. I thought that was something worth bringing up today. This week on Chicago's Best, a food mecca just outside of O'Hare. From classic Italian to old school steak, Chicago's Best of Rosemont, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. We've got a crisis in the NBA, and it's in Chicago. 720 WGN. We'll talk about that next.
Your team.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you just pull him?
Because I didn't want him in the game anymore, Sam. I think he needed to come over and think about it. He had three egregious defensive mistakes that I've talked to him about. So
he just said you weren't going to get into specifics, but then you said three egregious mistakes.
Yeah, I didn't say what they were.
What are the egregious mistakes?
I'm not going to get into it with you.
That was Jim Boylan, Bulls head coach, last night. Not easy times at the United Center right now for the Bulls, who are playing in a back-to-back at 6 o'clock tonight. But so that was interesting. 4 minutes into the game, Zach LaVine is your best player. Jim Boylan is not happy with the way he's playing defense. So he takes him out of the game. 4 minutes in, everyone's going to notice. You know your player is going to be angry. And we're going to put in Ryan Arcidiacono, because we know that he's going to do things exactly correct as far as the switches and the philosophy that Jim Boylan has on defense, period. And then after the game, he's asked about it, and he says he made three egregious mistakes. Didn't back down at all. Calling out his best player. So here, let's hear the whole audio of this, because we need it for the whole context of the conversation. And I think this could be a good thing for the Bulls, and I'll explain that in a second. But here's the audio from last night.
Your team, why did you just pull him?
Because I didn't want him in the game anymore, Sam. I think he needed to come over and think about it. He had three egregious defensive mistakes that I've talked to him about. So
he just said you weren't going to get into specifics, but then you said three egregious
mistakes. Yeah, I didn't say what they were. I'm not going to get into it with you. I'm not going to get into it with you.
Why do you think, consistently you can't get consistent play out of your
starters? Yeah. Out of our starters?
Yeah.
I mean, you could point to many things. Edge, physical toughness, competitiveness, we miss shots, and I think we get a little down. We had some really good looks in the first half we missed.
So that's Jim Boylan, and he's just clearly, he wants his team to be tougher. He wants them to be more responsible. He doesn't want the Miami Heat to come out and score the first 15 points of the game. I mean, it was 15-0 last night. Now, this is Jimmy Butler coming back to the United Center. It's not the first time, but here's a guy who had a hell of a career right here in Chicago. And you would think that maybe you would be slightly extra motivated to compete against Jimmy and not come out that sluggish. The Bulls missed their first 8 shots. Now, missing shots, by the way, is not effort. You can be trying as hard as you possibly can try, and you're just not hitting shots. That happens. But when it gets to the defensive side, which where Jim Boylan kind of lost it there, that's another thing. That clearly meant to Jim that you were not mentally dialed in. Let's hear the Zach LaVine side of this. This was Zach after the game at his locker. He was not the happiest Zach LaVine, and it was interesting, the conversation, Casey Johnson right in the middle of it.
I got off to a good start.
You were obviously pulled pretty early there. Did Jim tell you why?
I don't know. It's just, I guess I was the blame for it, I've got pulled early before by him. I guess that's just his thing to do. Yeah, take it with stride. I'm not the coach. What did he say I get pulled for?
He said you made three egregious defensive mistakes.
Yeah. Zach LaVine's, got 13 points scored on him, I guess, or, it was a starting five. I don't remember. So I thought I did. I thought I was trying to do my job out there. So, I got to take it with stride. And, like I said, I can't do anything about that. I just got to control what I can control. I can't control my minutes.
Right. Do you feel in a situation like that, though, that you may be getting singled out?
I mean, if you don't just pull me, yeah, for sure. But, that's not my decision.
Right.
Seth, do you know what the three egregious, as he called them, mistakes were?
I remember looking at them. I don't remember seeing three egregious mistakes. I think I was supposed to show on one. And I didn't. I told him to, because Jimmy usually doesn't set screens. He slips out of them. So I didn't want to show and have him, cut right to the basket. But they told me to show, so I didn't show. The other two, I don't know.
Did you communicate that?
Yeah. But
to the coach?
Yeah. You have conversation with him, but, he thinks that I had three egregious defensive mistakes. That's on him. He can make his own opinion on that.
So clearly the key word here is egregious, which is a pretty high-level word, right? I mean, Jim Boylan's going with egregious. Zach said it about five times there. Outstandingly bad, shocking is the definition of egregious. Like, if you're just sitting around hanging out, Curtis, would you ever use the word egregious?
Probably not too often.
It's just an interesting... maybe it would be huge, bad, terrible. He went egregious for like a little extra effect there, which I can appreciate, by the way.
I feel like that was well thought out before he came out to the podium.
And maybe it was. Maybe thought about, you know what, I'm going to use the word egregious. I'm going up there. I'm firing a couple egregiouses right at Zach LaVine. I know I'm going to be asked about this. What word do I want to say? I'm going to tell Sam Smith, who's covered the NBA for 30 years, that was egregious. I know that Sam understands that word. Carm in the back, if he was covering the game... That Mark Harmon guy, he might not know it, but not going to worry about him. I mean, I would have gotten the dictionary out. Egregious? Whoa. That's not completely true. Of course, I do know that word, but it is just... I haven't seen a coach use that on somebody. It was just... And so today, the good news... I mean, good news, bad news, whatever. They have talked. Zach and Coach Boylan have sat down, and they... hashed it out. They pointed out these are the plays that we didn't like. Zach apparently was in agreement. Coach, I got you. And I listen, they are not the most talented team in the league, right? They're trying to do the best they can to be a team that can compete for the playoffs. And it's not always going to be friendly. And it wasn't friendly last night. So we'll see what they do tonight. And But I don't think, like, people are saying, this is it. This can't be working. They got to trade Zach LaVine. Sometimes you just have you go at it with your buddy, or you go at it with your coach. Maybe I'm sure they're not best friends, but they don't need to be best friends. You just have to have that coach player relationship. The respect is a good thing. Most guys in the NBA or NHL or whatever, you know, people like everybody should be treated the same. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way at a radio station either. If you're the top dog, you're going to get a little bit more leeway than not the top dog. Let's put it that way. And, if the Lakers were in here a couple of weeks ago, I was asking Frank Vogel, their head coach, how are you partnering with LeBron? Well, I've always partnered with my best players. Like, you know, I consider that an actual partnership. You know, I go to them. That's the best player on the team. Because if you're not in line with the best player on the team, which Zach LaVine... If he's not the best, he's 1A, 1B. You got to have that relationship. Phil Jackson, Michael Jordan. Jim Boylan, Zach LaVine. Not exactly the same thing, but you get what I'm saying. Whoever it is, you want the top guy in there to be with you, to be setting an example in the locker room when you're not there. All that stuff's important. So that part of this is huge. But the other part of it, that they're having a little bit of a tiff, I think that's okay. They're still trying to figure things out. They're a young team. They've had this before happen. Last year, he pulled out all five starters. They all sat on the bench. Afterwards, it was ugly. The Bulls thought about boycotting. They weren't going to... You know, when Boylan took over Fred Hoiberg, he was given the directive from management, make it tougher around here. The guys didn't like it. They thought about sitting out. And then all of a sudden, they weren't sitting out, and they started winning a bunch of games. End of the day, the team's just not that talented. So it's going to be hard for any coach in there. I don't think if you brought Red Auerbach in his prime, you know, the Bulls are going to be competing for an NBA championship this year. But that was egregious, to use the word. Let's do a quick timeout. Come on back here. We'll play some Mitchell Trubisky. The Bears gearing up for the Giants tomorrow. Of course, Hamp will be in Cods at 3 o'clock. Let's talk some Bears football coming on back here. 720 WGN.
Yeah, I feel good. Day by day. Just take one day at a time, continue to get rest, rehab this thing, and try to prepare to play.
720 WGN. How did he do it? 533. Hope you're having a great Saturday afternoon. How did Mitchell Trubisky get healthy? I would love to hear theories. He had to leave the game on Sunday. He was in tears. Dan Hampton's got a great promo running on the station about that. Wasn't wild about the tears. And here comes practice this week, and he's Full go, 100%. I mean, I've never had a hit pointer, but that's a quick turnaround. I'm kind of curious how he did it. Or maybe there was something going on. Maybe he wasn't hurt. Maybe they thought it, maybe it was actually a confidence thing at the end of the game and the Rams had scored and it was over. But when you do go back and look at the tape, he didn't look healthy. And I noticed it earlier in the third quarter. Like he kept on throwing sidearm. I'm thinking to myself, that doesn't look normal even for Mitchell Trubisky, who doesn't exactly have the most perfect mechanics all the time. But it did look a little bit odd. I didn't really think anything of it at the time. But then, you know, some people think, was he hurt? Was he not hurt? I think he was somewhat hurt is the way I'm bringing it down. Like there was, if it was a game-winning drive, would he have still been out there? I think he would have been. If they had a better option at quarterback right now other than Chase Daniel, would Matt Nagy be thinking, you know what? And he wouldn't, I don't think he could do it, but he'd be thinking, you know what? If we had drafted Gardner Minshew in the sixth round when he was available, and this is what I'm getting from my quarterback, can I move on right now? I just don't think you can do it. They're so invested in him. But it would be interesting if there was an actual legit option behind him. But you're just sitting there with Chase Daniel, who clearly did not expect to be getting in the game late in the fourth quarter yesterday because he looked awful, straight awful. But we pulled a couple Mitchell cuts this week. I watched the 8-minute Mitchell Trubisky experience, which is, I'm always like rooting for him, like say something interesting, let me know what you're really about, give me, and I get it, he's not up there to perform and be entertaining and whatnot, and he's trying to say the company line as best as he can, but sometimes you just want to like just get to know him a little bit. And that did not happen this week. Curtis, you pulled a couple of good ones.
Yeah. my favorite is when the reporter asked, what's he expecting to do today?
What are you expecting to do today? That's a pretty basic question.
Yeah.
All right, what'd he say?
What do you expect to be able to do today?
Just prepare and try to practice.
You liked that one, Curtis.
Yes. So, that was literally his answer.
So we were looking for, well, the leg feels better. My hip is much, much, much healthier than I thought it would be. I actually feel like I can run around, and it should be a normal practice for me. But he's keeping it basic. He doesn't want to give anything. He doesn't want to get himself in trouble. All right, what else you got?
This is him saying mentally, or describing how he's mentally preparing.
Okay.
I'm good to go, I'm going out there. No restrictions, going out there and play. And I just got to communicate with coach and the training staff where I'm at, how I'm feeling, and take it day by day and just prepare to play.
He's been here long enough now. It's 3 years, right? He's going to be upwards over 40 starts. He's experienced this NFL. I know that there's been one thing in Mitch's life the entire time. Football, 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 and more football. And I know he started, just a reminder, the dude started 13 games in college. He was a backup. He wasn't necessarily used to being in the quote-unquote spotlight. He was also at North Carolina. So it ain't like he's the quarterback at Alabama or Ohio State and dealing with a lot of media scrutiny. So all of it was new when he got here, but it's not new anymore. And I know that the spotlight has been turned up enormously on him. That what was so great last year when the Bears were 12-4 and they were in the playoffs and Mitch led them down the field and they were right there to beat the Eagles and there was a lot of positive vibe coming his way. It's been absolutely the opposite this year, so it's not comfortable and he's probably not used to this amount of glare on him. But I would just love to hear him just, you know, if you pull the last question of the press conference, he was asked whether or not he enjoys being, like, talking to the media. And it was, like, the first time that he was actually close to honest. Where you got to, like, just feel the quarterback just a little bit. Do you like talking to the media? And this was his response.
Don't have to address the media. Do you want to be here today?
I think I have to. Yeah, my guys know where I'm at, so I guess me being up here is just for you guys. I mean, yeah, so I talked to them, and everybody just get on the same page.
So there it is. Right. I don't want to be here. I don't want to deal with you guys. I don't want to answer the questions. Last thing I need is another question from Adam Hoge about whatever play and why and whether I was hurt and what I, when I was not hurt or when I said that I was hurt or what happened at halftime. What kind? They asked him, what kind of treatment did you get? Nah, I'm not going to tell you that. Not telling you anything about my treatment. Not telling you anything. The whole secrecy thing in the NFL, they've just gone so far down the road with it. Nobody can know anything because somebody is going to get an advantage. Mitch, what happened when you were getting treatment in the locker room? Well, they put some ice on it, and then I got a massage, and they tried to keep it as loose as possible. I rode the bike for a little bit, and I was good to go. And that's why I came out in the start of the second half, and I led us right down the field, our best drive of the day, and I felt really good about it. Unfortunately, we just didn't play better later in the game. Bottom line, they got a winnable game tomorrow. New York Giants, noon kickoff at Soldier Field. Do you even want the Bears to win right now at this point? You know you're not making the playoffs, right? So, a high draft pick? Is that the best result we can wish for? I would say this. Mitchell Trubisky having a great final six games. His last two games have been better. I was stunned in the postgame show on Sunday when Hamp was sitting there. Hey, the quarterback played well. I mean, Dan Hampton and Ed Obradovich have been as hard on Trubisky as anyone in the town, anyone in the city. And Hamp was like, look, I call it as I see it. He played a pretty good football game. Ton of drops. Offensive line wasn't good. He played well enough to win. So let's not put it on the quarterback. If he can play better the rest of the way here, then maybe that would be one possible thing you could take out of the season. If he went the other way, which could be another thing you would root for, that he just is that bad that at the end of the year you're like, okay, we're done. Move on. Go get the best free agent quarterback that you can get. Bring in Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, Philip Rivers, whoever it's going to be. And let's just move along. But if you want to be optimistic, I think the big thing to root for the last six games of this year is the quarterback. All right, coming on back here, Chris Bowden's going to give us a little Blackhawks preview. The Blackhawks and the Dallas Stars coming up. Chris's pregame is at 6:30. This is 720 WGN. WGN 544. That's right. Blackhawks hockey on the air right now, or right this evening.
Not be right now.
Right now, not right now, Chris Bowden.
I just walked in from the parade traffic.
Significant.
It is. And it was less about getting through the people as it was finding a parking spot in my garage, because everyone's stealing all those parking spots.
Now, what's up with that?
Yeah.
We got to get some enforcement
bah
out there.
Bah humbug.
Right. Well, good to see you, sir.
Good to see you. How are you?
So, all right.
Good to see you back after your last weekend.
Yeah.
For some reason, I had to do a little extra air shift, a couple extra air shifts last weekend.
I did have the bachelor party. It was a wild affair. We went to the Grand Geneva. We played tennis.
Uh-huh.
We went to dinner.
Yeah.
People
Anything
were like,
else?
No, where's the adult entertainment? Yeah, it's not happening.
No.
It's not my scene. I just, no, I don't want to be with my buddies.
Yeah, once you're out of your 20s or something.
30s.
About, yeah, 40s.
45s. I waited.
That's here for the old guys.
I took my time. So, okay. Well, that's the way it went about. But thank you, by the way, for, who was it? You and Kevin?
Yes. Yeah. A nice 2.5 hour shift before Hawks pregame.
Oh, wow. You were
good. Got White Sox Weekly, talking some White Sox deals, some Kaepernick, some all that other good stuff.
Straight heavy lifting,
Miles
right there.
Garrett, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So here, did you see the ESPN piece this week on the Blackhawks? This is a little nugget.
About the kids?
Well, it says that the number four topic was the Blackhawks will make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked four people their opinion. I'm not going to give the names here.
Okay.
But number one says, the Blackhawks will make the playoffs. Are you in or out? Person number one, sell. Despite their improved goaltending this season, the Blackhawks aren't going to finish in the top three in the Central. And the Western Conference bubble is going to be intensely competitive. I respect the rebound, but they'll fall short. What would you say to that individual?
I say you have to definitely listen to that, especially kind of a disappointing finish to this three-game homestand with the losses to Carolina and Tampa Bay. Not so much Carolina, but Tampa Bay was a real vulnerable team. Now, the easy way to get out of this is check back with me after the next five games, because the next five games, two against Dallas, two against Colorado, one against St. Louis, the top three teams in the Central. So it's pretty important for them to make some hay here over the course of the next week and a half.
So I hear Kip on here, people say, Carlton's not the right guy. Carlton's off. Carlton can't do it.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I think,
don't see it either.
No. And I think, you know, Jeremy's got another year on his contract. And for all those who want to criticize him for perhaps not pulling the trigger on the adjustment that he did make a month into the season to kind of open up the offense, which unfortunately has gone missing here the last two games. But this was the same head coach that helped turn things around last year after he took over and got them actually back in a playoff position in what was it, late January, early February. So, he's around some good coaches. He's young, and but I think he's got a bunch of potential. I think he has the possibility of being a great coach in this league.
What do you appreciate most about Kirby Doc?
Boy, I think what I appreciate most is I can't see what happens two or three years from now, because if he's doing this at age 18 and probably good for about 20 more pounds on that frame. The way he is able to, between the reach and the way he's able to protect the puck right now, and I think he's definitely surprising some people because he's new to the league and they haven't seen him before. So the tape's now starting to get out on him, so we'll see what kind of adjustments the league makes. But for him to do this without a training camp, mm-hmm. And to have this kind of effect, it was funny. We were talking to Zach Smith on second intermission, I think it was two games ago at the United Center. And this, I think he has extended his point streak. It was last Sunday when he scored those two goals. He said, I don't think he's going to be on my fourth line very much longer. And he was elevated to the third line. I don't know what he'll do tonight. But Jeremy is going to, and the coaching staff is going to take it piecemeal. They're not going to throw too much at him. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him at some point up there on the first couple lines to see what he can do.
Mm-hmm. Chris Bowden in studio here. Blackhawks pregame coming up at 6:30. Hawks and the Dallas Stars on 720 WGN. All right, so here's another gentleman who's saying sell on the Hawks for making the playoffs this year. But this is what he writes. The Blackhawks have become one of my favorite teams to watch. They have the NHL's highest combined shots for shots against per game, which is, I guess, a stat that this gentleman loves.
These metrics.
Yeah, they love the metrics, right? The shots for shots per game. Okay, got it. People always want to show how smart they are, I swear.
Right.
You know? He wants to watch the development of Kirby. And remember that DeBrincat's only 21, Strome's 22. It's possible not to root for Leonard, who, by the way, is in net tonight. Mm-hmm. They are a year away from getting back in the tourney. I forgot that DeBrincat's only 21. If you had me guess, I would have said 23, 24, 21.
Right. Third year in the league so far. And I think something that people just took for granted was that Taves and Kane and DeBrincat were going to come back and be the same, put up the same type of numbers that they did last year, which were career years for all of them practically. And I don't know how realistic that was. Just to put that in the bank going into this season, I think may have been a little bit misleading, and people necessarily shouldn't have counted on that. But I think what they have put together makes them capable of surviving what would be, you know, lesser numbers that trio put up than a year ago. But again, they're still in the process of trying to put this together. By no means have they done that. They had that nice streak of, 6-1-2 over the course of nine games before these last two contests and that they ended up losing. So they still have to figure it out. And, you know, they got back into it by cutting things loose, trusting their goaltenders, putting fewer men in front of those goaltenders and trusting them. But it hasn't happened the last couple of games in terms of getting that offense. So we'll see what they do tonight here.
Does Troy Murray ever have a bad day? I don't know how he does it. He comes on the pregame, effervescent Troy Murray. During the game, the entire time, right next to John Weidman, never a dull moment, always ready to go. Then he does intermissions, two of them with Chris Bowden. Then you go into the postgame, still ready to go. I don't know how he does it. The guy's unbelievable. He never sounds tired. How does he?
He's making up for his playing days, because I tell Troy this and I tell other people this. When he was a player, and I covered him as a player, he was miserable after a loss. If you went into that locker room, he was a after a loss, you don't go talk to Troy Murray, even if he like had a hat trick or something like that.
That's funny.
I kid Troy about that, but he's made up for it. And hey, I just hop on his shoulders for pre intermission and post. He carries me.
Nah, let's not go that far. No, come on, you're driving the ship, Chris. He does. But he's phenomenal. There's no doubt. When you started covering the team, what year? Can you remember that far back?
When I first started covering them, it was when I was still in college, 82, 83.
Wow.
So yeah, those were the Orville Tessier and Dennis Savard, Steve Larmer, Troy Murray days. Yeah.
I mean, that's Carm childhood prime time right there.
That's right. Old Chicago Stadium.
That's Old Chicago Stadium. That's Sports Vision.
Right.
That's games are not on TV.
Right. Pre-Chelsea Dagger. What?
Yeah, right.
There was a time like that? What?
It's funny. I was talking to a 22-year-old young superstar in the business the other day, and who's your favorite team? The Blackhawks. Oh, why the Hawks? Well, I just grew up, and it was I was
won championships year after year.
I was 10 years old, and it was 2010, and it was unbelievable. And we were all watching the games, and just it was impossible to get a ticket. I'm like, that is not. Well, it was hard to get a ticket when I was growing up. But
yeah,
but then that era from about 2000 to 2007 was
right.
A little different.
Yeah, what the 22-year-old young superstar in the business doesn't understand. Go back and look from like 1997 through like 2007, when you could get a ticket to United Center in the stadium.
I was working out of town from I think 04 to 07. I come back to work with the guy, I think a guy you've heard of, his name's David Kaplan. He was at WGN back in the day. So I came back to produce.
Kaplan.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of him. So I came back to produce a show, and it's 2007, and so I'm going out. I'm covering a Blackhawks game. I'm like, oh my god. You could get great seats right there in the fourth row, or you could sit in the front row of the upper deck. What do you want to spend? Wherever you want to go.
I
was like, this would be a good investment. Some of these are. And then, of course, everything.
The Alexei Zhamnov, Alpo Suhonen days.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. those were a day. All right. Key to the game tonight, Chris Bowden. What are you going to say on your pregame show? Give us a little snippet.
Well, Troy will be the guy who provides the keys. But personally, this Dallas team is. Just to show what you're capable of doing in the NHL these days. They started out 1-7-1. They're now 12-1-1 in their last 14 games. They're on absolute fire. So it's going to take another big goalie effort. And, just when all signs point to things going one way, you think, Dallas is going to be the team tonight. That's when the unexpected occurs. So, I'll give the Hawks a chance. They need to jumpstart this offense, though, once again, because two goals over the last two games, zero goals in the first two periods each of the last two games. They can't afford to do that. During this hot streak, I think over the course of seven games, they had 2-0 leads five times in those seven games. It's nice to play from ahead. So getting out and getting some early energy and positive energy will be key in Dallas tonight.
And that was the one thing I read, by the way, since you mentioned the goaltending. Robin Leonard, I mean, you got to root for this guy. He's been so open about the mental health issues that he's tackled, and he's had a great career, too. So
despite all that, even when he played on teams that stunk in Ottawa and Buffalo, he still put up some impressive save percentage numbers. And that's what he said when he was asked about all the shots that he's seeing. He said, well, last year with the Islanders, with a great defensive team, that was the abnormality. I'm used to seeing lots of shots. And I put up great numbers in those years when I was in Ottawa and Buffalo and seeing lots of shots. It's something that he's used to. So he says it doesn't really seem to bother him. Obviously, in a perfect world, he'd like to see some fewer shots, but he and Corey have been coming up big season long.
Well, you got to be a great teammate, right? You're not going to sit there and trash your guys.
Although he doesn't mind sharing his thoughts with the media about what's going on, and for a new guy in the room, that says something, and I think the guy, he does it in a way where the guys respect it too. They're not turned off by him too.
Huge skill,
right?
Huge skill. That's veteran leadership. Got to have it.
Yep.
Chris Bowden, great to see you, man.
Good to see you. Thanks.
All right, pregame at 6:30 with Chris. Be there for it. Quick timeout. News coming straight ahead on 720 WGN. 609-720-WGN. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Started out my day up at Northwestern. Cats came up short against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Congrats to the Gophers. They've had quite the season. And I would have loved to have somehow seen Minnesota get into the national playoff contention. They were there, but then, of course, Iowa beat them last week, and that was the end of that. But a great season for Minnesota, and an extremely rough one for Northwestern that really no one saw coming. Had a five-star recruit in Hunter Johnson. You thought he was going to take the reins from Clayton Thorson, and it just did not happen. So the Wildcats are now 2-9, 0-8 in the Big Ten, with one more chance at a Big Ten win next week against Illinois, down in Champaign, 11 o'clock kickoff. The Illini losing today to Iowa, 19-10. By the way, I appreciate the fact that that game is at 11 a.m., so a couple of our WGN faithful can make it to the Carmen wedding, which is 1 week from tonight. I won't be on next Saturday getting married. Wow, that's coming quick. A quick wedding question for the text line, 312-981-7200. Hypothetical. If you came to a wedding on a Saturday night, and you danced, and you ate, and you had a good time, you had a couple drinks, and then it was at the end of the night, and you were walking out, and presented to you was Superdog, would you crush a Superdog? Would you go all in on a... You know, you don't get to go and order it, so it's going to come with everything on it, fries in the pack, end of the night. There you go. Here's your super dog. It's midnight. You're going home, or maybe you're sticking around for one more dance. Crush your super dog, because that's like my planning. I'm the worst wedding planner of all time. I've been a terrible partner. No one's done a worse job than me, and that is sort of just still sitting out there. Should the super dog? How many people are going to have the super dog? How many super dogs should we get? Now I'm starting to think, do people even want to have a super dog at midnight? Like, how often do you eat a hot dog? Wow, I'm getting a lot of nods on the other side of the glass. Curtis is all in on a super dog at midnight. So maybe I should stick to my guns. Who doesn't love a nice, big, delicious, juicy hot dog on their way out the door? Ain't that right, Curtis?
Yeah, and I was just going to chime in.
You're in?
We had a few weeks ago, on the Rokan show, we had a wedding couple who had catered Portillo's.
Well, that's a great one.
So, and that was a big hit. They brought in Portillo's at like around midnight, and it kind of like rejuvenated the group and kept the party.
It rejuvenated the group.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You're saying that it sustained the wedding people.
Yes.
Wow. Wow. Interesting. I mean, I don't want people falling by the wayside.
I'm not saying it. They were saying
Right. I get it. This is coming from others who were at a wedding, and Portillo's came in and everyone went nuts. I mean, who wouldn't want a Portillo's at the end? I would eat it.
All right. I'm all in.
Awesome. Let's see your text line coming in here. Yes, that would be awesome. Absolutely the super. Okay. And then I see there's the no way. No way am I eating that at midnight. I got to work out the next day. I don't want that sitting in my stomach. It's midnight. But I think it's a nice way to take care of people. Let's just say ballpark. If you had 200 people at the wedding, how many do you think eat a super dog?
I'd say probably at least half.
You think half eat it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I would say probably 75 to 100.
I think it's a 1 in 4. I think it's a 50 super dog. You think it's 1 out of 2? Okay. Okay. We'll get 100.
Lots of drinking going on. Plus, what else goes with drinking better than greasy?
Better than greasy fries and hot dogs at midnight. Okay. All right. Fair enough. We'll take care of it. Super dog. Got it. 312-981-7200. Just going to monitor the text line and take a vote at the end of the night. News today from the NFL that I want to bring up. The NFL has disciplined 33 players, 33 from the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns brawl. Now, not only are the players being fined, but the teams as well. The Browns got fined $250,000. The Steelers got fined $250,000. If you're not remembering this one, it was the Myles Garrett, who's a Browns defensive end, getting into it with the Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph, and they're having a tussle, and Rudolph tries to grab Garrett's helmet, and he's got his hands on it, and Garrett completely loses it. and he is able to rip off Rudolph's helmet, and then he swings it at him and hits him in the head, which A, could have killed him, and B, certainly could have concussed him, but D, Mason Rudolph actually turned out he was totally fine. Maybe he's got the hardest head in the world. But Myles Garrett is sitting out there right now, suspended indefinitely. Definitely for the rest of the season, and then we'll talk to you after the end of the season, and we'll see if we can allow you back in the league. I'm not endorsing what he did, and your thoughts are welcome, but I would think you could pick a number. How long is it? Should he never be allowed to play in the NFL again? Emotional, in the moment, lost his head. Football is an incredibly intense game. These are large men getting paid large amounts of dollars to take people to the ground and be as physical as possible. Again, not condoning what he was doing. But I do think you pick a number. Is it 4 games? Is it 6 games? Is it the rest of the season? Indefinitely? To me, that's like the NFL saying, like, we're going to try to be really hard on player safety here. And you're leaving a guy out there where, again, in the moment. So Garrett lost his appeal this week. He's going to lose about $1.2 million this year, suspended for the rest of the season. Rudolph was not suspended. That's the quarterback. But he did get fined $50,000, which is the most of any player, because he basically, you know, you could certainly say that he started the entire incident. Other players are fined $35,000. Marquise Pouncey was fined $35,000, but he did win his appeal. Saw his suspension go from 3 to 2. So there's no real roadmap for this stuff, right? But I just think wrong. Myles Garrett was in the wrong, but should he never be able to play football because he swung a helmet at a guy? I mean, OB and Hamp will be in here in a minute. You think OB wasn't having moments in this? Now, different time, but come on. It's the game of football. These men are admitted insane people. It's not normal. So a guy's going to lose himself a little bit here every now and then. Anyway, I think Garrett should be back on the field next season for sure. All right, before we take a real quick timeout, Eileen wants to talk about Superdogs. All right. Eileen, welcome to WGN. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm excellent, Eileen.
Good.
Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, and I want to congratulate you.
Oh, thanks, Eileen. I appreciate it. So does Chelsea.
I am a wedding planner.
You are?
Yes, I am.
You have a tough job, Eileen.
I do, but it's very gratifying.
Really? Because I feel like you plan a wedding, and then like the next wedding is next, and so you just dealt with all this headache from all these people, and like the thing is that it's over. Oh, at least I don't have to do that again. And you go and do it again. I don't know how you do it, Eileen.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful job.
Aw, good for you, Eileen. So what? So I'm guessing you have advice for me, considering you're the wedding planner?
Yes.
What do you got?
Yes. Well, I've done many weddings where we have had late-night snacks, whether it be pizza, hot dog, White Castle, things of that nature.
Uh-huh.
And French fries. Uh-huh. And people seem to eat it, but it's all in your timing. Because it depends on what your timeline is and what time you end up eating your entree, and if you're doing a sweet table and serving cake or whatever. Because if the dessert is right on top of it, then nobody's going to eat it.
So you need space between the dessert and the Superdog is what you're saying here.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Exactly. And it depends. Are you doing a sweet table or you don't know because you said you're really not involved anyway?
I that's true that I've done a terrible job being involved, but I am aware about what's going on for dessert, Eileen. Come on now. We have a gelato cart. There will be 6 flavors of ice cream.
Ooh.
Eileen. You like that?
Huh? Lovely.
Big time, right? The gelato
Lovely.
Cart.
Lovely.
So you're saying that the gelato cart needs to go out, it needs to be there, it needs to be hanging out, people need to have had their gelato, then they need to get back on the dance floor, work up that hunger again, and then with the Superdog.
Exactly. Exactly. And whoever your DJ or music band, they should be able to help you work the timing on all that.
Okay. We need coordination from top of the food chain. Oh, we got to get the DJ involved. All right, I got it.
And if you're working with a wedding planner, they should be able to work that in their timeline as well.
Oh, we're working with a wedding planner. I got 7,000 emails just today. You send more emails than any people on the planet, Eileen. You know this, right?
I don't really, but he or she should be able to work out the timeline and the timing so that it's not right on top of each other, and then people really like it. They do eat it.
Okay. Eileen, this was a huge call. I feel much more secure about the whole Superdog process now.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much. All right, have a great night. We're up against the clock here. Quick timeout. I'm going to do a little celebration at the end of the show for two players coming on back here, 720 WGN. All right, 720 WGN. People are texting in about Myles Garrett just because they were in the moment. That's not an excuse for Myles Garrett. It's not an excuse. I agree with you, sir. You're right. It's not a complete excuse. He should have been better. But what are you going to... I mean, where are we going? People are saying he should be prosecuted. If you start saying that NFL guys, for what they do on the field, should be prosecuted, that you're going to have a really, really, really long list. I don't think you want to go there. All right. I said I would wrap up with the treat this week. Derrick Rose is in town this week. The Bulls killed the Pistons. Luol Deng had his number retired. The Bulls were a relevant, fun basketball team at that point. And so Joakim Noah came back to show some respect for Lou, who was being honored, and his guy Derrick Rose in town.
Derrick's like a brother to me. You know, it was a real special time in our lives playing for the Chicago Bulls. And it's just a special time right now. Like, Lou's retiring, and you know, Derek's playing in a different uniform, but we see each other. It's a real brotherhood, and we all know that this was a special moment, a special time. So, you know, when Derek says that he wants his son to be like me, it's like, that's a compliment. It's just, it's a lot of love, you know. I mean, this is a special place for me, you know. We didn't win a championship, but there was a lot of hope in the city. We tried to represent the city as well as we could. You know, we didn't win it, but you know, this is a special place for all of us.
So I love that on 17 million different levels. First of all, it's great to win. Winning is awesome. That's the point. You're playing professional sports. But rooting for a team that gave it their absolute all and went as far as they possibly could and just didn't have enough to get by LeBron James and whoever else, there's no shame in that. And that team gave everything they possibly had. And there was just some phenomenal, phenomenal, incredible series, including the 7-gamer against the Boston Celtics, which they lost to Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce. But Joakim's going coast to coast, throwing down dunks. The United Center's going crazy. I love that team. Even though they never made it to the NBA Finals and only won one game in the Eastern Conference Finals, they gave it everything they possibly had. There was so much heart on that team. And I love that. And Joe, you don't need to apologize for the fact that you didn't win it. And the fact that you want to come back and respect these guys, that's all that you need to say. Special time in my life. Basically what he's saying is, I will never enjoy my life more than I enjoyed playing basketball in the city of Chicago. It'll be great. It'll be different. Joe's gotten married and he's got all sorts. He's got an incredible amount of dough. He can do whatever he wants. But being a young guy in your 20s playing NBA basketball with your best friends and against the best players in the world, I doubt he's going to top that one. And so I love that he looks back on it. Now, speaking of looking back, this was however many years ago today, Michael Jordan and Dikembe Mutombo.
Well, he closed his eyes. Remember, he did it in preseason against the Nuggets. 106-100, 3.5 seconds ago. Let's watch Jordan. I think he's talking to Mutombo. Close his eyes.
So that was MJ closing his eyes, saying, "Hey, Mutombo, this one's for you, pal." And he shoots the free throw with his eyes closed, nothing but net, and he smiles and goes down to the other end of the basketball court. That is an MJ moment worth remembering. I love it. He's having fun. Him and Mutombo have whatever they got going on that night. Game was played in Denver. If you want to go full memory of location because Mutombo played on a bunch of teams. Michael dunked on him when he was an Atlanta Hawk, but that one was when Mutombo was a Denver Nugget. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for White Sox Weekly as well. Rick Hahn, Yasmani Grandel on with Roe and Anna. And Curtis, thanks for producing tonight. Blackhawks hockey is straight ahead. Chris Bowden's got your pregame on 720 WGN.